Hello, everybody. This is Dan Hegerich, six-time cancer survivor, optimal coach, doing my best to help each person to live healthier, wealthier, and more loving today than they were yesterday. I mean, after all, isn't that what we're here for, is to feel our best, to be creative and loving in the process of life? I don't know how you navigate your life, but I'm imagining you want to improve something to do with your health, wealth, or your love in relationships. And if not, then certainly this podcast probably isn't for you. This one today, episode 10, is nutritional considerations for optimal health. Optimal meaning best health, ideal health, knowing that we strive for ideals and then we live within the reality that we have, or the constraints of our reality presently, always, always, always remembering that we're going to do our best. So this is kind of a follow-up to the last podcast, which was on movement considerations. And I hope you'll check that one out, because one of my main frameworks for life, or living life, is that we need to consider nutrition and movement. Not one or the other. Both. Nutrition and movement. And someone had sent me a request to talk about nutrition. So here we are today. And I want you to know this is my 10th one. So I'm learning how to do podcasts better and better each week or each day, each time I do one, in the hopes of producing good content and value to your life. Hopefully in the future or near future, I will be inviting guest speakers on to the show to help with, I don't know what it is, inspire you to live healthier, wealthier, and more loving today than you were yesterday, to inform you or get your mind and faculties on board with new information, or essentially old information that is brought to the light today in our modern crazy times. So let's start this one off with a beautiful quote that I have here, a nutritional quote. This was by John W. Cartmell, who has a master's of science. He's a certified nutritionist. He wraps up nutrition really, really well here, or health in general. Health is a state of balance, and that balance is often unique to the individual. Finding the right nutritional balance is a self-discovery process. Let me repeat that, a self-discovery process. There's no goal. There's no end result. It's a continuous self-discovery process. It is the job of the nutritionist and other health professionals to help guide and support the patient, or in my case, student, through this discovery process, giving advice and building strategies to find what works best for the patient, in my case, a student, while maintaining a general state of nutritional balance and sufficiency. Let me repeat it again, because there's a lot in there and I won't add my own stuff into it. Health is a state of balance, and that balance is often unique to the individual. Finding the right nutritional balance is a self-discovery process. It is the job of the nutritionist and health professionals to help guide and support the patient through this discovery process, giving advice and building strategies to find out what works best for the patient while maintaining a general state of nutritional balance and sufficiency. I like that because it really wraps it up in modern terms. However, we will have more quotes during the podcast about what other older, wiser philosophers may have come across or shared with us. So let's just get right into some of the ideas that I want to share with you that you might start to consider about nutrition. First of all, when we think of nutrition, we think of diet. And when we think of diet, we think of food, just food. Now, let me expand what diet is, in my opinion. Take it for what it's worth. Diet is everything that you put into your eyes, into your ears, into your nose, into your mouth, and on your skin. Diet is everything you put into your eyes, ears, nose, mouth, and skin. Your skin consumes 60 to 80% of what you put on it. Just think about that for a second. What you're putting on your hair, on your face, under your arms, all over your body. You're eating it. You're consuming it. It's going into your body's systems. Diet is also the end result of what you brought into those eyes, ears, nose, mouth, and skin, metabolically speaking. So it's the efficiency of how well you create energy from what you consume or take into those avenues. Let me just shed some light. What you take into your eyes, what you look at, what you are putting your vision on is going to be either nourishing or malnourishing. Think of all the TV programs you're watching, visual effects. And I think we can agree that looking at a sunset or a sunrise with our eyes can be incredibly nourishing and regenerative. It's a nutrient that people aren't prescribing or suggesting to their patients or students, but of course I do. The sunlight coming into your eyes is nourishment. So all you guys wearing sunglasses excessively, you're missing nutritional opportunity to let the sun indirectly hit your eyes. These are just concepts right now, folks. Down the road, I hope to have experts on this to actually give the science behind it, because I am more of an artistic expression of life rather than the scientist. And these are just things that I've come across in my life to put into my own personified version of how to navigate nutrition, so it's called. So remember, whatever you put into your eyes is important. The beauty of life can feed your eyes and feed your body and feed your mind, and your philosophy can, physiology can respond accordingly. What do you put into your nose? What are you breathing in? What's the quality of the air that you're breathing in? What about your ears? What are you listening to? Not just outside of yourself. What kind of music are you listening to? What kind of radio shows are you listening to, or music on the radio? And what do you listen to with other people that you associate with? What are you bringing into your ears? And what is your self-talk? What do you hear yourself saying over and over and over again? Because that's nourishment or malnourishment. It's part of your diet. You're feeding yourself food for thought. So it would be wise to start watching what you say internally to yourself, because that could be malnourishing or nourishing. What is your dialogue going on, your self-talk? What are you listening to? In fact, some would agree that whatever you're listening to outside of yourself is actually what's going on inside of yourself. And of course, then we come to what you put into your mouth in terms of solid foods or beverages. What are you drinking? These contribute to your diet, and it's not just what you just did today. It's what you did yesterday. It's what you did 5 years ago. What you've been doing all along. And you have compound interest in either nourishing yourself or compound interest on the other side, where you've gone into nutritional debt. So it's not a shaming, folks. This is just me sharing an observation of things to consider when you want to move forward from where you are right now to where you want to go, is that diet is everything you put into your eyes, ears, nose, mouth, and on your skin. And it is what is created from within you as well, based on what you're thinking, what your visualizations are, etc. So back when I had to change my so-called diet, back in 1995, that's when I really had that hit. I have to make a change in my diet and exercise program. And then eventually I had to upgrade that language, because I upgraded the language to diet is nutrition or nourishment and exercise is movement. I did that because I came to the realization that just because I'm on a diet doesn't mean it's nourishing. If you look around the American culture and the Westerners at large, and even now globally, everyone is on a diet. Everyone has a certain diet. They're eating and drinking stuff, and they're consuming something, and that's their diet. Now take a look. Is that diet nourishing or malnourishing? I don't need to educate you folks on the American diet as it is at large. The war on obesity, the war on cancer, the war on heart disease, the war on diabetes. It's not working. Depends on where you're coming from. I should take that back, because if I was a businessman, I could probably say that the war on cancer, heart disease, diabetes, mental illness, whatever you want to call it, all these chronic degenerative diseases of modern living. If I was a businessman, I would say doing pretty good. My investments are steady, stable, and increasing. But in my life, wanting to make your life better in health, wealth, and love in relationships, I'd say we're losing that war. And that's because whenever we exercise war on anything, you only get a war back. It's like if you want to hold an argument and argue it with aggression and anger, what are you going to get back? You're going to get an argument back with aggression and anger. So in my process, I changed it to nutrition and, of course, movement, which I said is in the most recent episode, episode 9. So let's go through a few considerations here, because there's a lot of confusion and polarity and contradictions around nutrition. So why don't we just start with food? You could do this with beverage as well. So do you want to eat or consume organic food that nature produces? Or do you want to consume chemical foods out of a lab, processed like with artificial fertilizers and pesticides and fungicides? What came first, organic or non-organic? Why is there such a war between the two? Why is there a misunderstanding between the two? And now, of course, the confusion is that organic is a big business and non-organic is a big business. So now we have to be buyer beware about what is really organic. It's just a consideration for you to think about. For me, I do my best to know my farmer and the farmers around me at local farmers markets. And I hold this highest standard of organic food for my particular organic body. How about quality versus quantity? The quantity of the so-called calories that you eat is different than the quantity of the calories you eat. And many people might need to eat so much food because of the lack of quality that the body needs to actually keep craving more and more food to fulfill its needs. Think about it from this perspective. Food is information. It's intelligence. And we certainly, when we consume it, if we're not getting the information to meet the needs of our body, the body might set us up to want more food, more stuff to put in to get that information that it needs for optimal living and functioning. So the quality of food trumps the quantity of food for me personally, because I hold that the more the food is produced and prepared and delivered by nature, the more information I'm receiving from nature to feed my natural body. What's another consideration here? Raw food versus processed food. And cooking, especially high heat cooking, is a processed food. There's a war going on between those two, raw versus cooked, raw versus processed. As you can see in big box stores, right? All the processed food that fills 80% of the store versus the fresh raw foods and fruits and vegetables and the meat departments and fish departments, etc. You can see there's a big war going on that it seems like society prefers processed food, chemicalized food, over nature's food, raw food. So I lean heavily into raw food. Doesn't mean I don't have some cooked food, but I have an understanding of why I cook it. And that's because I want to actually get as much nutrition from whatever I'm preparing or cooking. For example, I eat most of my meats and fish and chicken and poultry's organ meats. I eat them in the raw state. But if I want to have a whole grain that serves me, let's say it's rice or something, I process it according to nature by fermenting those grains for a long time, usually 3 to 5 days, and then I very slowly cook it over about an hour. So raw versus cooked, or raw versus processed, is a big deal, and it's something you want to start to consider in your everyday life to get more of nature's information from your nutritional program to increase the quality of that nutrition and to eat more in accordance with nature's laws or with nature's intelligence. Think about it this way too. This is kind of a neat way to think. The amount of energy I spend on cooking and cleaning is virtually little, because I can just take a piece of steak and put it on the cutting board and eat it. And that's it. So the idea that raw food maintains integrity and maintains the information and intelligence of nature in it is an important consideration. Think about it also this way, that in raw food nutrition, the water element is still there. The microbial element is still there, the earth element. The structural integrity of that food is still there, because if you cook proteins, especially at high heat and even at low heat for long, slow, low, and long cooking temperatures and time, you're still denaturing the protein. So you're altering it from how it was delivered from nature. Lots of books are written on enzyme therapy and enzymes. Edward Howell, I hope I didn't botch that name. Edward Howell, he's a very big proponent and expert in the field of enzyme nutrition. And so what people will do is think, oh, I'll just cook my food, I'll process my food, and I'll take the enzymes. Well, that makes a lot of sense because the enzymes are already in the food if you eat in the raw state. So now you have several other inputs into your food. You're breaking it down by cooking it, and then you're having to replace the enzymes from some other external source. So what do you think? Raw food nutrition versus cooked / processed food? And raw food also doesn't mean ice cold out of a refrigerator, right? Because I can put my, in the winter specifically, I could put my, let's say, ground grass-fed beef, pastured beef in the oven and bring that meat up to about 100, maybe 90 degrees for the winter. So it's somewhat warm. But it's not cooked. The proteins didn't denature. Probably having a question about how can you eat raw meat? It's going to be the germ theory, or you're going to get parasites, or you're going to get bacterial infections, food poisoning. I'll get into that in this podcast about the germ theory a little bit. You know, I'm not the super expert on it, but I did come across it in my life a long time ago, and I'll share that story with you. So just hang in there. What's another consideration that's on, what is it, on the table to be discussed, which is a big controversy as well? Are you an herbivore, vegetarian, vegan, or a carnivore? And then there's a spectrum in between there, ranging from omnivore on one side and omnivore on the other. So are you an herbivore? What is your physiology? What are you designed to consume? Have you taken any anatomy classes? Or are you just reading popular press, following what's in vogue? Your favorite celebrity is doing one thing or the other, which is fine, but are you qualifying that against what the physiology and anatomy of the human body is capable of doing? And I'm talking about reality, not idealism, the ideal spiritual person, because the ideal spiritual person says you have to be a vegan. Not all. I'm generalizing there, so I apologize if someone takes that offensively. For me, spiritual eating is consuming what you need for your body to function optimally. To know what you need and to be able to consume that so you can optimize your physiology and metabolic system. That's spiritual eating. And if you add gratitude into that and thanks and prayer, et cetera, et cetera. So it doesn't matter what you're eating as long as you're eating what serves you to be at your optimal best. So do you eat an herbivore diet or do you eat a carnivore diet? Now, there's going to be arguments for both sides of that coin. Someone's going to give you the fact that we don't have the anatomy for eating animal meats, animal products. And someone can hold the argument that we do. So for me personally, taking anatomy and physiology, I lean towards being a carnivorous or carnivore-ish omnivore. And when I mean carnivore-ish omnivore, it means that I will include some fruit seasonally, small amounts, And I really stay as much away from the grains, the beans, the legumes, and even plants or vegetation. So vegetation is leaves, stalks, and roots. But when it comes to late spring, early summer, I do engage in things like asparagus. I do engage in things like arugula in small amounts. Usually I just make arugula as a pesto so I could put it on my meat to bring it into modern times and feel a little bit of pleasure while I'm eating, a raw pork steak. Or I might use some of the vegetation to make fish ceviche in the summer. But generally speaking, I keep practicing the art of my nutritional game by simplifying it as much as I can. So what would be an argument for a carnivorous diet? Well, one of the arguments is that we've done it for millions of years. That's one reason. And what would be a reason for going vegetarian? Oftentimes, vegetarian diets or vegan diets, I really can't speak for why they would do it, but I know that I went that way because my digestive system wasn't functioning very well at all. And so I thought, maybe that's where I got to experiment or explore. And of course, when I did, my digestive system did not improve and it got worse. I had to use the rationalization that I'm detoxifying and my body's adapting. But then when I turned over to more carnivorous diet, my digestive system started to feel better. And even now today, it's even better. So let's just recap a little bit. Diet is everything you put into your eyes, ears, nose, mouth, and on your skin because you consume 60, 80% of what you put on your skin. So if you're not going to take a tablespoon or whatever that stuff is, you might want to consider something different. Organic food grown and raised and produced and prepared by nature. Organic food, which came first? Organic versus the chemicalized non-organic food. It's a big war going out there. You're going to have to educate yourself a little bit deeper and wider on that, but you could use common sense as well. What came first? Quality versus quantity. I'd rather take 1,000 calories of grass-fed, pasture-raised beef, 1,000 calories, than 2,000 calories of farm-raised grass-fed beef. And I can assure you, I will have way better satiation on 1,000 calories than 2,000 calories or 3,000 calories. Doesn't matter for me personally. And keeping the integrity of that quality by eating it raw or in a very warm state or a very low, slow cooked state, which if I cook my food, it's basically for pleasure. I mean, literally, I'm not thinking this is for ideal nourishment on the physiology level. It's more of a pleasure and nourishment on the pleasure side. But I always feel superior on raw food. So it's your experiment. Remember we talked about that quote in the beginning, right? It's your self-discovery process. Quality versus quantity, raw versus processed, and cooking is a process. Herbivore or vegan versus carnivore or some sort of omnivore in there. I lean on the omnivore-carnivore side with seasonal fruits on occasion and a couple of grains in the winter, highly fermented, but I don't do it in the summer, spring, summer, or fall, just in the, you know, 12 to 16 weeks of winter time here. Usually it's like December, January, February, and March. Yeah, it's like something like that. Here in the Northeast, it's cold, it's winter. So there are some quotes that I wanted to share, because I think we actually have to have a philosophy around food too, or a philosophy around what we consume. I mean, think about the beverages we take into our body. I mean, what is the beverages that we really are designed for? Think about it. Water, maybe even blood from the animal, maybe coconut water. What are the things that you could think would be a beverage that nature delivered, that man didn't get in and profit and exploit people's vulnerability around it? Right? Primary water, spring water. You know, your bottled water that you buy in a plastic container, that's a processed food. So if you're doing all kinds of great things to avoid artificial sugars and sugars themselves, artificial dyes, artificial fake fats, all those vegetable oils, but you're eating fake water, artificial water, processed water. So one of the quotes is very, very clear, is that the first wealth is your health. And that's Ralph Waldo Emerson saying that. Your first wealth is your health. And that's in alignment with my particular philosophy that health is the foundation to life. So remember, you got to come up with your own philosophy. If you haven't created your own philosophy of what food and what nutrition is, or what diet is, or whatever any of this stuff is, if you haven't come up with your own, then you're locked into a cultural philosophy, a social philosophy, meaning the people you associate with, their philosophy of nutrition and nourishment, and family traditions and their particular philosophy around nourishment and nutrition. You're locked in until you start to question it. So the first wealth is your health. Ralph Waldo Emerson. For me, for those out there, you want to hear again that health is the foundation to your life. How do I know this? How did I come up with that? Because when I think about a baby coming into the world, the only thing that I would be thinking is that baby healthy. The only thing I want to make sure is that that baby is healthy, because it's the foundation. And it was validated by Dr. Tennyson. Great Grandmaster Tennyson had a PhD in traditional Chinese medicine, acupuncture, but he was a great grandmaster in Qigong and Kung Fu. And when he saw me back around 2002, he looked at me. He told me to lie down on the gurney, the table, face down. And he came into close to my eardrum, and he whispered into my ear. He goes, "What did you learn? What did you learn?" And I said, "Health is my greatest asset to society." He said, "You emptied yourself slaying the dragon. You're riding on spiritual fumes. And now we got to fill you back up, because you're going to need to be bulletproof for what you want to share." And then he proceeded to have me come into his office every session for some wisdom. And thank you, great Grandmaster Tennyson. and to God for guiding me to such a wise and strong and powerfully graceful human being. And of course, the older philosophers always said that, you know, our food should be our medicine, our medicine should be our food. That was Hippocrates, the father of modern medicine. And there was a proverb, an old proverb, I don't know where it comes from, I just always remembered it. If we eat the right foods, no medicine is needed or necessary. If we eat the wrong foods, medicine will not work. These are all old philosophical wisdom that we've lost to a very large business that has us seemingly trapped. And I'm suggesting we consider getting back to the basics by learning to eat more in accordance with nature. Diet is everything you put into your eyes, ears, nose, mouth, and on your skin. Nutrition is what is going to feed what I need or what is going to support what I need so I can have very efficient and effective metabolic function for energy output, for clean energy output, so that I can live my greatest version of myself in this lifetime, to live up to what I am capable of becoming as a human being. And you'll know this because nutrition makes you feel alive, makes you feel compassionate, it makes you feel joy, it makes you feel creative, and it makes you want to live and participate in this world to make it amazing when you're nourished. And at least in the body. Imagine if you nourish your mind. Imagine if you nourish your spirit. It's all great. It's all good stuff. It's just an experiment we have to, or an adventure, an adventurous experiment that we need to remind you of that quote in the beginning. That health is a state of balance, and the balance is often unique to the individual. Finding the right nutritional balance is a self-discovery process. It is the job of the nutritionist and other health professionals to help guide and support the patient through this discovery process, giving advice and building strategies to find what works best for the patient while maintaining a general state of nutritional balance and sufficiency. That was John W. Cartmell, Masters of Science, Certified Nutritionist. So folks, take that to heart. This is Dan Hegrich again, and I'm really thankful that you found your way to this podcast. I'm doing my best to work out the learning curve on how to provide content and the technical stuff behind the scenes to make it a good podcast and on the path to making it a better podcast and on course to making it maybe the very best podcast. Who knows? That's not in my hands. What I can do is just work on today and make it as best I can, the best I know how. This is Dan Hegrich. This is Do the Cure podcast. Please share this with friends that you think would benefit from it or find it valuable. And as always, my vision is to help make a contribution to the eradication of chronic degenerative disease as part of the human experience through nutrition, movement, dialogue, and detoxification. Blessings to you, power and grace.